Well, hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database, growing every day with music video information, stuff, pictures, all the things you want to see. My name is Adam, I work at IMVDB, and with me as always is the butterscotch boy, Mr. Doug Klinger. How are you?
Doing super good, Adam. I'm also growing every day.
Yes, we're all growing every day in different ways, growing together. That's kind of what this podcast is about, emotional growth. And the math.
We all did too for me. That was insane.
And then so we also have the master of emotional growth, Mr. Adam Alexander, Fringe Music Fix on the podcast. Adam?
I am great. I'm wearing my big boy pants today.
Oh. Okay, all
right. And then we have an awesome guest on the podcast, somebody who's, if you're familiar with this podcast, his name you should be very familiar with, Mr. Evan Prosofsky, coming at us all the way from Greece. Adam, Evan, how are you?
Hey guys, hey world, I'm good. I don't have pants on.
First of all, we should say congratulations on your two music video award nominations for Best Cinematography.
Thanks, man.
So it's actually the Video Music Awards, but that's cool. I'm curious, and I might be asking the question that Adam was going to ask. Do you find out before the world, like, or do they even tell you directly, or did you like find out when we did?
Yeah, I found out when you guys did. I had no idea. I found out on Twitter, or actually, Emily emailed me. She was like, "Cool," and I had no idea.
And we should say that you are nominated for your director of photography work on West Coast by Lana Del Rey, directed by Vincent Haycock, and Afterlife by Arcade Fire, directed by Emily Kai Bach, both videos that have black and white work in them.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of black and white lately.
Because you think your most recent music video release is Early Days by Paul McCartney, directed by Vincent Haycock again, and that is 100% black and white.
Yeah, it's all black and white.
And are you for those black and white sequences? Are you working in 35mm?
Yeah, those particular ones were all shot on 35mm, double X, real black and white stock.
And so for the Paul McCartney Early Days video, I mean, you know, I think everybody who, I mean, I guess is older than like 20, I guess, probably knows who Paul McCartney is. He's kind of a legendary figure, Was it a little, and he's in the video a lot. I mean, was it kind of intimidating working with him?
Yeah, it was super intimidating. It was amazing though. There was like a big build up to it, 'cause we were scouting, Vince and I did a commercial in New Orleans, and then we were scouting, like, in between shooting the commercial, we were checking out locations in Mississippi and, you know, scouting cast and things like that. And we knew that after we shot that portion, we'd be taking a bunch of them back to LA to like jam out with Paul. So it was kind of like this big epic build up to the day that we finally got to meet him. And yeah, we met him, and it was just, yeah, this big kind of thing. We'd all been thinking what's going to happen. And he was such a cool dude. Like, Vince just had his cell phone number, and he'd be like, "Yeah, just call me, like, if you have any ideas." Like, so we'd be like in New Orleans, like in a swamp, and Vince would be like, "Hey, Paul, like, we're in a swamp. Like, what's up? What do you think about that?" And it was just really surreal. He's such a humble dude. And I was scared, but then I met him and he gave me a big hug, and then I wasn't scared anymore.
It's insane to me that Paul McCartney even has a cell phone. He seems like somebody who would just like get all, like, somebody else has a cell phone and they have to just like write everything down and hand it to him and let him respond. He seems like that cool of a person.
He was super humble. Like, the big Paul McCartney,
like
story.
Flip phone humble, or not that humble.
That would be funny. I didn't see his phone, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it was.
You didn't see his phone, but you know it exists. So that's cool. That's more than we had. You mentioned it being kind of initially intimidating to the build up to working with Paul McCartney. Is it the same type of intimidation that you experience with the build up shooting with Johnny Depp?
Yeah, I was more excited about that. I wasn't like, because he's just, they're both, you know, we got the impression from like the producer and from the video commissioner that they were both like super mellow guys. And Vince, the director, had been on the phone with them like a lot, kind of prepping things and chatting and making sure that, basically just making sure that everything ran smooth, like once we got there, because we didn't have that much prep time in LA, so we kind of knew what we were getting into. And no, man, they were super nice, like just typical professionals, like kind of once you meet them, you realize why they're so famous, because they're just like the nicest, most normal people and just like really good at their job.
Boo. We want them to be mean and angry. No.
But I will tell you the one nice Paul story was that we shot this long day. It was like whatever, 8-hour day, which is long for someone his age. And he's just like performing the whole time, like really giving it. And then he got like, he was just like a little bit cranky. Like he just said like some tiny little remark to like one of the PAs or something. It was like no big deal at all. But then Vince and I and AG, we went out for drinks after to celebrate. And I think this is, I can't remember if I was there when he called. Anyways, Vince got a call from Paul being like, hey man, like I feel really bad. Like, and he knew the PA's name. I don't even remember the PA's name. He's like, I feel super bad. Like I kind of like, I just like yelled a little bit at like Ashley, and I just want to make sure that like, you know, she's okay and you guys didn't like fire her or something. And like, she was really awesome and really nice. And like, I just feel really bad. I can't sleep.
I can't. Vince is probably like, who's Ashley? I don't even know.
It was surreal. Like, and he was doing shit like that the whole shoot. So it was really fun. It was basically like the best client you could have.
That's Canadian levels.
So,
You know, these past two videos have been huge. I mean, West Coast by Lana Del Rey was a huge video, and obviously any Paul McCartney video is going to be huge. And they're both black and white. And I was wondering if, you know, what the decisions were to go black and white for those two videos, and if they were similar.
I don't always know 100% how it goes down behind the scenes and stuff, but I think in the case of the Paul McCartney video, he actually really liked this video Vince and I did for this guy called Rafferty, which was in black and white. So I think, I think it started with Paul wanting black and white, or maybe Vince pitched it to him or something, because he was sort of inspired by that vibe we had in that video. So I think it all started there, and then we kind of went from there. And then when it became like a period piece, it just sort of made sense, I think. And the Lana video, I don't know. I think probably Lana wanted that. She's got like a real strong aesthetic. Like she really knew what she wanted. I think she really referenced Let's Get Lost, that film Let's Get Lost. So I think we were, a lot of that was just trying to like recreate that feeling for her. It just so happened that there's been a lot of black and white stuff lately, I guess.
That's the trend, but we haven't seen a lot of, well, I guess those two videos are the kind of the biggest examples of that, videos that are entirely black and white, because Afterlife has those black and white segments. And those, the black and white segments in Afterlife, those are 35mm, and then the color ones are not, correct?
So some of them are 35 and some of them are 65. There was a bit of a mix. Like when he's in the quarry, there's some 65 stuff. But yeah, it's all real black and white.
And I wanted to ask about the, you know, I love those shots on the beach, on the West Coast video by Lana Del Rey. And I'm trying to think of the Steadicam operator's name. It is, jeez, somewhere in here. Brian Friesch.
Was it Brian Friesch?
That's what Ari Robbins told us. Because when we had Ari on the podcast, we're like, you did such a great job on West Coast. He's like, I didn't do West Coast.
We tried Brian. Oh yeah, that's what I remember. Because yeah, Brian is Ari's homie, and we couldn't. Ari's like my dude. He's such a nice guy. He's like the best Steadicam operator I've ever met. And he recommended Brian because he wasn't available, and Brian really killed it. He was awesome. Shout out to Brian.
And I was wondering about the kind of relationship between you as a DP and a Steadicam operator, because, you know, the Steadicam moves in that shot are so vital to, you know, how it's pulled off and how it looks. You know, how closely do you guys work? You know, what sort of instructions do you give, you know, a guy like Brian when you're kind of setting up a shot like that?
Kind of depends on the shoot. And with Brian, to be honest, I barely spoke to him. Vince was super hands-on on that shoot. I really can't take any credit for that video. That was like, Vince knew we wanted a zoom, and I think we were both really worried that just like, we didn't know how much time we'd have with Lana. She's like a big star. We didn't know like how she was going to be on set and stuff. So you just kind of have to like set up a situation where you can shoot as much as possible really quickly. And we knew that if we did it with like as much natural light as possible, just like wait for the sun to be in a good place and put a zoom lens on, we could like add a lot of life to it and get a lot of shots very quickly. So honestly, it was like us just running frantically around the beach for like half an hour shooting, and Vince like directing Brian. I really just like ran. I lost my sunglasses that day because I was running so fast.
There's actual documentation of you guys running frantically around the beach in the form of paparazzi photos that came out from that video that actually show like you, Vince, and Lana in the ocean and like Vince pulling his own focus and that kind of thing. And so I'm assuming you guys had no idea that there were paparazzi around that day.
No, well, yeah, it was kind of crazy. I never actually did a great job and that I had no fucking idea they were there.
So Evan, what was Lana like on set? Did she also give you a hug?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, couple. Yeah, she was cool, man.
She seemed so cool.
She was really specific. Like, I think she really knew what she wanted, and that's good and bad when you're a director. But it's always a good thing when you're a DP. So it was kind of fun working with her. And I don't know. I wish I had something more specific to say, but yeah, she was really nice.
I think Adam was most interested in the hug.
We're looking for hugs info here.
Yeah.
If you could rate Paul McCartney and Lana Del Rey's hugs on like, firmness and embraceness, you know, just like on intangibles.
The firmness of Paul McCartney's hug was very firm and loving and affectionate. And I think I had a tear in my eye and he saw it and said like, "Don't worry, mate." Like patted me on the back, and I think Lana probably just gave me like a very kind of like quick, like professional hug, and I was like, cool.
But they both have value, so that's
can't
good.
Believe I just described that.
That's what
the podcast is for. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. We're trying to
podcast is all about. I wanted to ask just a little bit about like, because obviously you with the Grimes Oblivion video just like 2 years ago was kind of a big break for all you guys, for Grimes, for Emily and for you. That's kind of like when, you know, that first big video. And then, you know, kind of in the last 2 years, you've gone from like you guys essentially sneaking into a stadium shooting a video to like shooting large Paul McCartney videos. Is there anything that you've kind of learned over the last 2 years that you've been able to kind of apply to your work now in shooting music videos?
Yeah. I mean, that's a cool question. It's hard to answer, though, but I mean, the easy answer is, yeah, you learn so much on every shoot. Like, you know how music videos are. It's such a, like, there's just never enough time and money. So the way you work just forces you. You learn so much. It's just, like, getting put in the shit every time. So you come out, like, doing a commercial, there's only so much you learn. Maybe you learn, like, you get a more creative, like, collaboration with a director you've already worked with. You just like heighten your friendship or something, but or get, you know, to play with big lights. But like on a music video, you have to know how to work fast, and you have to know how to work with like egos and work with a small crew and scout things around the light, because you can't often light or you can't afford the big lights that you need. And all of that stuff was interesting, like shooting natural light on Grimes and just trying to put her in the right places where the light was already good. And then applying that to a video like Paul McCartney or Lana was kind of fun, because it's really just the same thing, but different star, I guess. But it's fun to use the same approach. And, you know, to be honest, nothing's really changed. It's just nice to know what your options are. It's like, well, I could put a big light there, or we could just, like, wait for the sun. So, I don't know. It just gives you a bit more confidence, I guess.
And do you think that the artists that you work with, despite how, you know, whether they're a Beatle or not, like they're still receptive to like dealing with that type of stuff and like realizing that that's kind of how music videos get made, is like waiting for the sun and fitting, making things work that otherwise you wouldn't have been able to afford?
No, I don't think so. I think they have a pretty generally pretty unrealistic view of what it's like. Then they're treated, you know, very well. They're always treated in such a way that, which is good. It's good for the director that, you know, they just kind of come in and do their thing and then come out and kind of leave room for the director to be creative. Because I don't think, even if you wanted to explain to Lana Del Rey why we were waiting for the light, it's just like, I don't want to be in that situation. So we just, you know, she like comes in, does her makeup. The AD is like super set. There's a schedule. There's a timeline. They keep her busy. Maybe she's doing think she was doing, like, when we weren't filming her to keep her busy, they were taking stills for her album or something like that, you know? Like, it's always really regimented, and not that you can't, like, talk to them or collaborate with them, but I just don't think that's really, I don't know. I haven't seen it really work.
That makes sense, though, because you know, you think of the, you know, I think it would surprise a lot of people. Maybe people who are familiar and unfamiliar with production.
Yeah.
How run and gun, even like some of the biggest music videos are.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the trend, I feel like, though. I mean, I'm sure that one of my first AC on that Afterlife video, Davey used to do all the Hype Williams videos, and he was telling me that, like, back then there wouldn't even be budgets. Like, just him and Hype and the DP, like Malik Saeed, would just drive around, and they'd be like, how many helicopters we need for this shot? I don't know. Should probably get like 3 cameras, so that's 3 helicopters. All right. Like,
like, yeah.
Budget yet? They would just, the budget would be informed by like how many helicopters he wanted. And there was no run and gun about that. You know, you'd have a crew of like 300 people and like a crazy schedule. So I think it's like the budget and also just the trend of who's popular. Like, Vince obviously wants to work in a more natural style, so that's the way we shot the video. I'm sure that had he pitched a different brief to Lana, we could have shot like a super studio thing or whatever.
And that, yeah, now we're back to one helicopter. It's a one helicopter
race. Yeah,
there's a great helicopter story that you and Emily tell in the in your commentary for the Hearts Wings video, right? Is that the one?
I don't know. Yeah, we always have helicopters for some weird reason. We had a little kind the Super 8 mounted on the helicopter for that, and
yeah. So it wasn't that one. What was the one where you? What's the video where you guys?
Nightlife.
Right. That's the one where you guys like took a helicopter tour. Right.
Yeah. Because we saw the brochure in our motel.
As you think that's probably how Hype Williams was doing it too, right? Helicopter tours.
Oh, dude, no, he was.
No, of course,
okay.
I'm okay,
good. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
We're all sorry. I actually had a question about that video because, and we're going back a few years now. This is 2002, the Sebastian Schuller video for Nightlife. But I, you know, it's all shot in Miami, and the way I understand it is you and Emily were kind of walking around Miami looking for shots.
Yep.
And Miami's such an interesting looking city. It's got all sorts of kind of elements that you wouldn't find in any other city in the U.S. I don't think. So I was wondering, you know, as a DP looking at that, if that was a challenge to shoot, because Miami is kind of a place of like neon lights, of really hard light everywhere. It's an odd kind of looking place.
I kind of think that's like Emily chose it for that reason. We at that point, we still hadn't really traveled that much. And I think, first of all, going to Miami sounded like a really romantic place to shoot. Like, just like the city and the lights and the warmth and the beach. There was just like all this scenery that we hadn't been able to explore and shoot in Montreal. And the song kind of warranted it. So I don't think we really put much thought into like the difficulty per se or like what it really meant. You know, practicality, but we knew that the neon and the color and the water and all of that would sort of add to it. And also just like warm weather, being able to stay up all night and shoot was really important. I mean, on some of our other shoots, it's just limiting, like in Canada, it's like cold. Nobody wants to shoot an 18-hour day, but Emily and I could, cause it was really relaxing and nice.
That's one of those practical things I guess you don't think of is like, you know, sometimes it's what temperature does it become like kind of dangerous to even have a camera, a 35mm film camera outside?
I don't know. You can replace the oil in them to this special like cold oil so that you can shoot whenever. I think any temperature works still, just like sucks. I don't know.
This is how much I do not know about cameras, because I had no clue that a camera had oil in it. So there we go. And there were different types of oil.
Yeah, it's fancy.
I wanted to ask a couple more questions about the VMAs, if I could. And mainly my main question is, are you going to watch it?
Yeah, totally. It seems I'm excited. It's going to be fun. I want to go, but I might be shooting. So I might be shooting a thing with M. So I don't know if I can, but we really want to go, actually. Are you guys going?
No, we are definitely going to watch it though. We are going to live tweet it, but I don't think do they broadcast the cinematographer award? That would be fantastic if they did, but I don't believe that.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it.
I don't believe they do. So does that as far as you
say? Hold on, Doug. I think in like 2012 they did not, and it was but now they have a little segment. You have to. It's like a blink and you miss a segment. But for the technical awards, choreography. The kind of irony is half of the awards are technical professional awards, but they do list them now on air, which they did not used to do, which I think is a definite step forward. And I think we have to check through the records, but I think having two nominations the same year for cinematographer is pretty rare. I think there's one or two other instances, but they're like back in the mid 90s. So, but we'll check it and we'll put it in the show notes.
And as far as you know, if those videos win, do you get a Moon Man?
I hope so.
You haven't looked into it. No, I'm assuming you just still living on the high of knowing. We're curious because if you do, we want to know about it.
Okay. Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, I think Michael Reagan should win. I think that video he did is so nice. It's so much better than my video. I also think that Darren Liu, the guy that shot the Beyonce thing with Jackson Hunt, Darren Liu is so fucking good. He's incredible. So props to Darren Liu. And it's so cool.
So you're happy though just to be alongside you're a big fan of the your co-nominees then.
Yeah, it's a crazy honor. It's super cool. I mean, I didn't, but the only thing I don't know yet, maybe you know, is like who votes for this stuff. I don't even know who nominates these things. Like, what if it's just like has nothing to do with cinematography and it's just the video that got the most views or something?
It was just me. It was just
Alexander is chooses. We're actually not sure about that. I do believe that the winner is voted on based on the nominees. I don't know, and anyone can vote on that, and we recommend people going to vote. But I'm not sure where it came from. But the reason I ask, because this year, you know, we've seen years before where like we see the nominees in almost every category and we're really like scratching our heads by it. Like it really does just seem like the stuff with the most views is what's nominated. But this year in particular, like we're not really mad at most of it. Most of it makes a lot of sense to us.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. It's the most album sales or something.
Yeah.
I do think that there is so the gate to nominations. I do think there is some sort of committee with it, like the Grammys. You're on a committee, or you're not a committee, but you're part of the Grammy voting group, which is a few 10,000 people. With the MTV, it's a lot more opaque. But I'm pretty sure it's some sort of group within MTV itself that is comprised of a certain amount of members. But yeah. So that's and yeah, we've been impressed. So there we go.
That's cool. Yeah. When's this podcast come out? I hope I didn't make any VMA person angry.
it'll be tomorrow. But how would you have made them angry?
That's okay. I don't know. Just not knowing shit. But
I don't think you're required to know.
You're not winning now.
That's their problem. They didn't tell you.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We actually had in like 2012 VMAs. We had like people like artists tweeting the directors asking if they won certain categories, and the directors were like at the VMAs and they had no clue what was going on. So MTV, maybe you need to work on your communication a little bit.
Yeah, that's coming from us.
Oh man.
So I guess should we talk a little bit about some music videos this week?
I think we should. There were some good ones.
Take a few mins.
A couple of mins.
But one of them is we had a few pretty amazing music videos come out this week. Some from our favorite directors, and one of them was for one that I actually did not expect. Here, Mariah's video for Spoon. The concept of this video is, well, actually, Doug, you wrote the article on it. What do you explain it?
Sure, I will. And I guess are we gonna just give away the ending? Are we assuming people who are listening?
It's a spoiler. Full spoilers.
Spoilers in this. So if you haven't watched this video, watch it first.
Spoiler alert.
Because in the article that I wrote about this video, I focused a lot about kind of the pacing of it. And that is like a major element of the video, is just kind of like when things are kind of delivered to you and revealed to you as the viewer, it really kind of like takes its time to do that. Like you're not really explained what's happening in this 4-minute video until like past 3 minutes and 30 seconds into it or something. And so the essential concept is Spoon frontman something. What's his name, Adam? Britt?
Yeah, Britt.
Britt is driving a sweet Plymouth in LA, and it's kind of slowly revealed. First, you kind of see that he's beat up, and then you kind of see that like everything outside of the car is kind of just gone to shit. There's like burning tires and people running fearfully through the streets. And then as the video progresses, the camera finally widens, and it's revealed that there are a giant children just kind of like playing in the streets. And when I say giant, like I'm talking about like Honey, I Blew Up the Kids big. Kind of just like wreaking havoc on the city, and everybody is, you know, they're killing people essentially, but having fun while doing it because they don't really realize that what they're doing. That's kind of that's what happens in the video. Super good. Everyone loved it. I did.
Oh, I'm definitely a huge fan. Especially like you said, the reveal. It was a cool calculated video, but that final reveal when you see what's created the destruction is what sets the video apart from other apocalypse. Post-apocalyptic type videos.
This is like mid-apocalypse.
You're right. This is
mid-child apocalypse.
This is one where I was wondering what the girl was doing in the back, and also the guy from Spoon. He doesn't seem super like scared of these children. I guess if there are giant children, you know, they do have the power to crush you, but. You know, they're children. I guess there's some sort of mental kind of dissonance going on there.
Yeah, it's not like they're doing any of this. They're causing any of this destruction intentionally. I saw it described somewhere. I think it might have been an interview with Hero or something about kind of like humans in an anthill. How you kind of like don't realize like the utter chaos that you could be like inflicting on this, you know, culture of ants if you step on an anthill. And so maybe it's, you know, like a similar perspective with these kids. They don't realize all these people that they're killing. They're more concerned with, like, playing with the ball. What girl are you talking about?
The passenger in the car,
right? The girl
in
the back seat, yeah.
Yeah, she's just kind of listening to music, daydreaming. Yeah, it's an interesting kind of mood that they both have in the car, given that things are getting destroyed. Yeah.
And so I have DP questions for some of these since we have Evan on, and one of them, I have to imagine that like this has like so many car shots, yeah. And I feel like with like a car with glare and glass and everything, all the kind of factors that go along with it, that car shots are kind of a challenge. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. I think the hardest part probably. For them was just getting all those shots, all the hidden cuts. I think because they shot at a time of day where reflection isn't like a huge deal, but maybe I'm wrong.
Evan, staying on the topic of car shots, it's actually something I've often wondered. Especially on sitcoms, it seems like car shots are often green screened. And I always wondered, like, isn't that kind of like, I gotta understand you're on a set usually, but like it's always green screened. Is that like a hard shot, like a moving vehicle shot?
I mean, I really don't know why they, I mean, sometimes it's probably money reasons or like time reasons. Like maybe they don't have time to dick around driving around LA in traffic, trying to get like a good shot or something. But I think generally, I could be wrong. I think it's cause like some stars just won't do it. Like, cause when you know, you can put them on the car on the low loader or whatever you call it, you know, like, so somebody is driving them, but it looks like they're driving and it's kind of like. Sort of realistic looking, but if a director wants them to actually just drive around a city and do it for real, it just takes forever and it's really hard to rig the camera and just like it's kind of a pain, and I think lots of actors just don't do it.
And you talk going back to the Spoon video, you talk about the hidden cuts that you saw. I there was one that I thought that I saw for sure, that was the when they go up to the sky and that appears to be a cut there. Were there more that you think that you recognized?
I mean, maybe the camera movement looks like they smoothed it out in post, and maybe that's just because they had to do some sort of it was like bumpy or so. I have no idea how they did any of those shots. Did Larkin shoot? I don't think Larkin shot that. We should ask the DP. I have no
idea. Eli Bourne.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know Eli. But, yeah, I don't know.
If you're listening to this, send us some sort of postcard. Tell us how you did it.
Yeah, tell us, Eli.
Tricky devil.
One of the videos we had on the list this week was Oblivion by Bastille, best known for their... What's that song called that they do? Pompeii, that's it, directed by Jesse John Jenkins. But this video, if you are a Game of Thrones fan, and I am a huge Game of Thrones fan, it's kind of a pastime of mine to find all the music videos that Game of Thrones actors and actresses have been in. But this one has a major one. This is features Sophie Turner, who plays Sansa Stark on Game of Thrones, which is a main character, directed by Austin Peters. And this is her playing someone who is singing the song Oblivion by Bastille at a very dirty sort of car drag race crash into each other festival. I'm not really sure what it is, but
Demolition Derby.
There we go.
That's what it's called. Adam, you're not familiar with demolition derbies, man. You didn't spend enough time in the South, Adam. Even though you're still here, this goes down lots in Miami. No, it doesn't. But I know about it too because I think there was a Real World episode where they had to do a demolition derby. Maybe it was Road Rules. And then you also at the end after she's singing at this, you see that she's also a competitor in the derby.
That's right. And the people here, they're digging it. And isn't there a shot where there's a severed hand on a? Anyway,
didn't catch that.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
So maybe I was just seeing things, but I don't know. Sophie Turner is such a great actress. If you don't watch Game of Thrones, she's amazing in it. The series starts where she's a lot younger, and she's a kind of a really kind of linchpin of the whole series. I think she did a great job here. There's this kind of trope of people getting in front of audiences and either winning them over or not winning them over. You know, I think music videos have done it either way, and I think she wins them over in this case. Singing a dude song, though. We're not hearing her sing it. We're hearing the guy from Bastille sing it, obviously.
Right. I'm also won over. Now, are we supposed to, like, assume that she's maybe, like, this is kind of like the national anthem, but instead of the national anthem, she's singing Oblivion?
That's kind of what I got.
I got that, too. So since it's not really her voice, could it be... I don't know. I don't even know. I'm not going to try to dig too deep.
Maybe... And not to dig too deep, but just maybe they're playing with gender stereotypes a little bit because she's singing in Bastille's voice, and then you would expect a demolition derby driver to possibly be male, and then we find out that she's also the demolition derby competitor. So maybe they're playing with that a little bit without going too deep.
That's deeper than I was going to go.
I'm sorry.
But, cool.
Keep it light.
The car she gets into is all, just like seems like it's already wrecked. I don't even know what she's doing in there.
That's listen. If you would have done the demolition derby research, which I asked you to do going into this podcast, you would know that's how they work. You get like a shitty car, and then you just go like it's the last car that can run. Like you basically smash into cars until they can't move or you die, and then whoever is either alive or their car is alive is the winner. And children watch them. Children watch these. We will. There will hopefully
children watch Game of Thrones. So that shouldn't be.
There will be more insight on this video to come because I believe Austin Peters will be recording a director commentary for us on this video. So look for that. Look for that. Coming.
If you want to see a video that came out this week that already has a director commentary, we've got Basement Jack's video for Never Say Never, directed by Mr. Saman Kesh, who... Evan, are you familiar with Saman Kesh and his work?
Yeah, I know. I know him and Isaac work together a lot. Also, shout out Austin Peters. He was a really nice guy. I met him once. And Jackson Hunt did a crazy good job on that video.
Yeah, Austin, New York represent. He was at OMG all week as well, a couple of weeks ago. Represent OMG. Any chance to mention it?
So this video, just to explain it, because I'm convinced someone has if you look at his videos, the one thread that goes through there is butts. There's a lot of butts. like in both of the placebo videos, Too Many Friends a little bit more, but also in Loud Like Love, there's just a lot of butt shots. And this one is about a group of people developing a what is called the twerk bot, and it sort of takes you through this whole process of them creating this twerk bot. And the twerk bot is a pair of legs that twerks, and
it's a pair of legs and a butt.
You can't have a twerk bot without a butt. But it just goes, it's like, it's supposed to be in Tokyo. I highly recommend listening to the commentary. It's done by Simon and the wardrobe designer, Michelle Thompson, and get a little bit of insight into what the heck is going on here. But by the end, they have a pretty convincing twerking prototype.
It is, and I'm pretty sure most of this is pretty practical as well. I think there is a little bit of post work, but he's in the commentary. Simon talks a lot about like how they were like actually puppeteering the twerk bot, so it's not going to twerk on its own, but with some work, this is a practical effect. Neat.
I can't actually pre-order the twerk bot.
Not yet, but they've been joking a lot about a potential Kickstarter. I don't think they'd pull it off.
Oh, nothing. I was just giggling.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
he was considering donating to the Kickstarter.
Well, you know, something like that may not be too far off. Have you guys seen the real dolls?
Yeah. Oh my. Yeah.
I mean, those things cost like $2,000, and they're like.
Why do
a
you
real
know that?
Person. Somebody was mentioning on some sort of podcast that I was listening to about, and them up online. But and the weird thing is, it's not like a really big slick corporation that makes them. It seems like some guy who has a warehouse somewhere in the U.S. that's just designing and making these real dolls. So, if you want to see the real dolls, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
I have a confession. My new girlfriend is actually a real doll. That's why I'm keeping on the low pro about that.
We all had a suspected a little bit, and
yeah,
we're proud of you. Everything's fine.
I saved up real long there, and I bought it.
It's got super weird. Super weird. This is. I think we should go on. We should stick with the weird. How about this? Here's how I'm doing this transition. We're gonna go from weird to Weird Al. How about that? Because lame claim to fame. Weird Al, if anyone didn't know, which how could you not, that he released a whole bunch of music videos last week, leading all the way up until this Monday. He just put one out every day, and every one of those videos was massively popular, which was pretty unexpected, but also pretty sweet. I'm on board with Weird Al just like taking over the internet for a while, and also like actual record sales. This is like the first
number one.
First comedy album to go number one in like 50 plus years, something like that, which is remarkable.
Definitely his first number one of 35 albums, which is a thing.
That is a thing. Well, obviously, yeah, because he hasn't been making music for 50 plus years, 30 plus years, but not 50. So anyway, the video that we want to talk about is the most popular video from this week. Al's got like four still in the top 10. He had four last week. And this is lame claim to fame. And this is like a stop motion animated video. And the concept of the song is a character who is just super proud of the fact that like he's met celebrities in public in pretty generic scenarios. And instead of getting too deep into talking about this video, I wanted to see if any of us had any lame claims to fame. And I asked Adam Alexander specifically because I knew he would have a bunch, and I think he does. I think he's got six, right?
I definitely have two. The more I might have a third, but I'm going to go with two.
Okay.
So
lead
I'll
us
make
off.
It quick, though. I'm going to make it quick. Leave lots of time for Adam Fairholm's claim to fame.
Okay.
So the first one was I stood in line at Coachella 2007 next to J.L. Strauss of America's Next Top Model. And she ranked sixth the year that she was on the show. And later, she made an appearance on Dr. Phil for her drug addiction problems. So yeah,
you stood in line near her.
Yeah, and she had like a cool like super soaker like water pack like hooked up to a super soaker, and she was like ready for Coachella 2007. She was set.
Man, that's yeah. Sick.
So that's the first one. And okay. The second one would be I met Jared Leto briefly. I went to a 30 Seconds to Mars concert, and he was doing like an autograph signing. And there were like a whole bunch of like 18-year-old girls like chatting it up with him. And he was like, you know, just playing along. And I had like a really super well thought Requiem for a Dream question for him. So like I finally got up to the line, cut through all the girls. And like I pitched my question to him, and I was hoping for like a cool answer, like right from him. And he just like ignored me and turned his head to some other 18-year-old girl. And I was mad. And I don't like Jared Leto anymore.
So wow. That's that one. That one's painful. The other one was hilarious. And this one makes that one made
harsh.
Me sad.
It was harsh. Yeah.
That's a great. This is a lot more painful of a segment than I envisioned it being. But that's great. Those were great. Those were perfect. I'm 12. I'm at the Houston airport, and I see Kenan Thompson walking through the airport, and I like flip out, and I start going, Kel, what are you doing? And he just keeps walking. It doesn't look over to me, and then my sister turns to me and is like, that was Kenan. And I got super sad.
Yeah, yours was sad too, Doug.
Not really. Not as sad as you waited in line for Jared Leto. That was sad off the bat.
Yeah, you're
that
right.
That was sad before you, Georgie.
But in my defense, Requiem for a Dream is my favorite movie still to this day.
Yeah.
Evan, we can't really... I guess you have met a lot of celebrities, but are there any of them in a completely mundane situation and not on a set?
Well, I haven't met that many because I grew up in a small town in Canada. So the only time I've met quote unquote celebrities is, I guess, a few musicians I worked with. But like, I was trying really hard to think, and I've literally met so few that I can't really think of ever meeting them. But I have even further removed stories. Like, literally the only story I remember that came to mind after like really thinking was that this director that I worked with, I'm shooting a documentary with him. And he knows David Blaine, and he just kind of like dropped it one day in conversation at dinner. And I was like, I just freaked out. I couldn't believe that he knew David Blaine. And I just, the whole time, I think I creeped him out because I was just like, tell me more David Blaine stories. And
that is, oh man. That was a dinner conversation.
That's a secondhand lame claim to fame. So that's like twice as lame claim.
Yeah. And, okay, the only other one I could think of is that I joined when I was in grade 11. I joined a choir so that I could go to Disneyland, and it was awesome. It was really fun. But okay, so we're on the plane, and I don't know. I mean, who knows if these things are real or not? But I guess remember what was that show? Was it American Idol or something? Like the original, that guy that was really, really, really bad at singing, but he got famous and everyone loved him.
What was his name? It was
his album.
It was
it's oh my god,
we're all so bad.
William Hung.
Yeah.
So apparently word on the street was that they saw William Hung in the airport, but I wasn't there.
That one wins.
You can't give out a win because that means that you don't have to tell yours, but you have to tell yours.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So it was 2003. I was in New York and I was seeing a performance of Cabaret with my girlfriend at the time, and it was the intermission, and I'm rushing to the bathroom to be the first one there because I know there's gonna be a line, and I realize the person I'm rushing with is Cuba Gooding Jr. And I beat him. I beat him to the bathroom. Just a few seconds, but I did. So I was pretty happy with that because we were both hustling, you know, trying to walk but not look like we're running, because he definitely had to go pretty bad, same as me. So that would be the only one. And one time I thought I saw Biz Markie in an airport, but that doesn't count.
That's funny,
man. Biz Markie would have been funnier, but I like the Cuba Gooding Jr.
So let's talk about. I want to talk about the Pharrell video. So we've got, this is a video featuring Pharrell, with Pharrell featuring Miley Cyrus, two of arguably the biggest stars out there right now. If you're talking like mid 2013 up to now, I would argue they're two of the biggest, together in a Pharrell song. And I thought this was, so there's two parts of this. There's Pharrell in a building, and I guess he's auditioning people and,
dancers.
Dancers and stuff, and there's only like five of them, which is, they're trying to do a montage, but there's only five dancers, which makes it a little awkward. And then there's like a Miley Cyrus segments which are very entertaining. But the thing that struck me, Evan, I wanted to ask you about this because I've always kind of figured this is the case. They're in this building, but mm-hmm. the walls are all windows. They're shooting against the windows. And I've always heard that is both kind of unnerving and difficult to do, to kind of, you know, expose the you know, LA outside plus them inside really well.
I don't think, I mean, it depends. Back in the day, if you had some shitty digital camera, maybe. But I think the DP that shot that, Alexis Sabe, he's super talented. So I'm sure if he did it, he did it for a reason. And that director, Luis from Canada, is like super talented, like such a sweetheart, super smart. I think, and they had those big Breeze lights. You can see those, the like rap video lights, you know, the really big circles sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
One of them. So he just had one or two of those on the dancers, filling them in. And I think that was like super easy for Alexis. Or Alexi.
It looks really fantastic. I thought the video looks great. And especially they use color really. There's some installation on the wall that Miley and Pharrell kind of hang out in front of that looks really interesting. And there's so many, Miley Cyrus and Pharrell are kind of hamming it up in this, and I think they kind of carry the video. I think I liked it.
Yeah, and I'm a shameless Miley Cyrus fan. I wish that it would have just been them, maybe. That I wanted more Miley in it. There wasn't enough Miley.
I mean, that could, okay. Come on, Adam. You could say that about any video, right?
Yes.
You watch any video, it's like, why isn't there more Miley Cyrus in this video? So it could be said of any video. It's interesting because obviously 24 Hours of Happy is a fantastic video, and the 24-hour version, and even the, you know, the edited 3-minute version or whatever is still a lot of fun to watch. But it's funny now to see the, because like on the surface, 24 Hours of Happy is like, oh my god, this is the most insane like concept ever. I can't believe an artist, you know, was willing to put up with that, you know, thinking about how, you know, Evan was talking about how, you know, you're not, the artist is not going to be there the whole time, and you know, you're just fitting them into like a larger scale thing. But like Happy, Pharrell had to be there for lots of time. But it's interesting now to see all three of these videos kind of laid out, the three videos from the Girl album. And Pharrell's part is pretty similar in all three. He's kind of just being cool Pharrell, singing and rapping towards the camera. And I'm wondering if, you know, that was going to be the case no matter what, and it was up to these directors to, like, do something with that. You know what I mean? Now kind of looking at these three videos as, like, as you know, as a whole from this album, am I just like talking out of my butt?
No, because the girl video has shares similar themes. You know, a lot of girls, Pharrell,
Marilyn Monroe. You mean
Marilyn Monroe? Sorry, yeah. Shares a lot of different shares. Some, I wouldn't say is similar to, but has some common threads in there. And you know, that they kind of all really nicely stem from the concept of the album as well. As Pharrell is this kind of untouchable, awesome dude that you're never going to be as cool as, and all these girls who he's never really like sexually interested in, but are always kind of fawning around him. He's one of those guys who has a really weird and interesting dynamic that he mines really well.
Yeah, I think not knowing too much about what actually went down, I think that Pharrell's brief is just like kind of like most musicians. It's like, make me look cool in my own specific little way. And he has his own little specific ways that you just discussed. And I think the directors were probably given a bit of freedom. Like, I know We Are From LA wrote that concept for 24 Hours of Happy. And I know that Canada, like, that aesthetic, like, their look is, like, super prevalent in that Marilyn Monroe video. So I think he's probably pretty cool to work with, if I had to guess. I think he's probably some good creative freedom.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess it was, I guess I was just, you know, implying that, like, he had an idea of what, his presence in these videos was going to be, and then like the rest was up to the directors to do something with. Because yeah, definitely that Canada vibe is definitely in that Marilyn Monroe video, and yeah, that I mean that 24 Hours of Happy, just conceptually and the execution is fantastic, and like it fits perfectly with that like Pharrell being a cool stylish man vibe that he does so perfectly. And so cool.
One other fun note that I thought was kind of interesting that I haven't really heard of much before is that Alexis Abe shot all three videos and they're with different directors. So I get Pharrell must like request him every time or something, which I thought was kind of cool.
That's super interesting. Actually, I haven't heard of anything like that being. Well, it other than you know, it kind of reminds me of Mike Reagan and. Portugal the Man, actually. It's similar. I know, Evan, you shot one of those Portugal the Man videos, right?
No, I think Mike Reagan shot a bunch of those. Oh, I haven't shot any for...
Sorry, yeah, my mistake. You shot the other That Go video
I
did around that time. That's where my... Yeah. But yeah, that's another example.
Don't worry, I'll cut that out, Doug.
Yeah, cut that out. Yeah, you're going to be cutting a lot of my stuff out.
We'll just cut Doug out. Cut him out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was never here. I was never here.
This
is weird how I did that.
Oh, boy.
Stupid. I'm so dumb.
I guess that might be something that's very rare, is an artist of Pharrell stature like kind of requesting a DP. But, I mean, that's why I think... In music videos, especially, the photography work is just so key, so important. Obviously, the directing work and all the other details, but you know that's why you guys are awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think the smart ones try and embrace it a bit, but it really is all the director. But I've heard stories of like pretty big pop stars saying funny stuff. I know I won't say who it was, but I know somebody. That was like to Dion Beebe, who's like shot Chicago, probably one of the most famous like female photographer. You know, he shot like he's made everybody look beautiful, basically.
Yeah.
And was just like, "Where's my key light? Like, where's the big light? Like, right in front of the camera," and like giving him lip and stuff, and just like, "What the fuck are you doing?" So that's kind of cool.
And it's funny because we were just in Athens, Georgia for Sprockets, and we saw Stephen Metallo's talk on the history of music videos, and some of the best stories that he told were like director of photography stories of like you know, incidents between DPs and artists.
Is that that Bruce Springsteen story that he tells?
It's a great Bruce Springsteen story if he wrote out in a blog post, I'll try to link to. But yeah, there's a famous Bruce Springsteen story with I think Daniel Pearl.
We like he tricks him into like making him. Like he has him like hired under the pretenses that he's shooting a different video for a different artist, and suddenly it's like Bruce Springsteen. Like, actually, this is my video, man. I'm sorry. And they had beef. They had beef going into it. Yeah, that talk. Stephen's talk is pretty sweet. History of music video. Stephen Patella.
I want to hear that. That sounds.
Do you follow someone like the old, you know, music video like DPs like Daniel Pearl and those kind of guys, Evan?
Not really. I know who Daniel Pearl is as like a feature DP, but I don't. Yeah. I always like, that's one of my favorite things about shooting when you get to get, you know, sort of a quote unquote real crew is all those stories from like my gaffer or something. You know, it's always so funny hearing that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that we covered it, you guys. I think we blanketed it with knowledge, with insight.
We did a great job. I'm proud of us all.
We did a great job. So if you want to see the show notes, you want to see the music videos we talked about on this episode, you can go to imvdb.com/podcast. This is episode one. Hold on, I closed the window. This is episode 116. We're recording this on July 24th, 2014. Released on next tomorrow, on Friday. And one thing that you should check out, if you have an Apple TV... or if you have an Android device or maybe some other thing with an Apple device on it or with apps on it, check out the Vimeo app. Vimeo is featured, our Music Video Land channel, on the Apple TV app, on the Android app, and possibly a few other places. There's some great videos on there, handpicked by Doug, to go on that that channel. So you can sit back in your living room if you have the Apple TV, relax, watch some videos. They're all fantastic. And if you want to check out Evan's work, we've got a link to his IMVDB page on the show notes, and then we can find you on Twitter. And do you have a? I can't remember if you have a website or not, Evan.
Yeah, I got one of those.
Nice. Yeah, so you have a worldwide web address. We'll also have that in there. Evan, thank you so much for joining us. This is awesome.
Thanks, guys. It was fun.
Thanks, Evan.
And good luck on the VMAs. Those are coming up in August 24th, exactly a month from today. So we'll be rooting for you.
Thanks, man. Well, root for Michael Reagan. He did the best job out of all of us.
Sounds good. We'll
root for everyone.
Okay, we're going for Michael Reagan.
I hope it'd be so cool.
Nice.
Yeah, that would be sweet.